Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan, and I have John joining me. After the bye week, we're back. Illinois, Washington. We ready to flush the Ohio State game, John?
I hope everyone is as refreshed and ready to go as I am, because, yeah, that was not necessarily a bad outcome or a bad effort, but just one of those where in a game where you needed absolutely everything to go right and those little things all went the wrong way, it was just kind of doomed from the start.
Yeah. And Ohio State was a team. I mean, we predicted we'd win that game, but nationally, it's not a game we were anticipated to win. I thought the scoreboard looked competitive. To your point, we didn't necessarily play our best football by any stretch of the imagination, but the result is, an L, and an L that I think most people were anticipating. So the bye week couldn't have come at a better time, 7 games in here before we get our bye. And it's nice to be able to refresh and see what we got for the final stretch of the season here.
Yeah, I like that the defense came out as competently as it did against Ohio State. It kind of sucks that you wasted that effort there. And like, honestly, too, like the Ohio State talent is absurd. They probably have, you know, 24, probably even more, maybe 36 NFL players just sitting on that sideline. And the defense held their own. And the fact that you couldn't capitalize on any of the good efforts there was not the most bueno, but I guess it gives me some level of hope for this upcoming week. But it just stinks because, like, you know, even when Urban Meyer was around, there would still be like the sleepwalk in West Lafayette. There you'd lose to like some, you know, game that Ohio State shouldn't, because they just happen to have a bunch of draft picks that think they can roll out of bed, and most days they can. And yeah, they usually do. And in this case, you know, it worked out for them, but felt like one of those where you maybe could have gotten them. But I mean, I'm not going to dwell on it too much. It just stinks that, like, in what could have been maybe a program changing kind of game, that you laid an egg.
Yeah. An opportunity to make a statement for sure. But I do think we've graduated out of the, hey, we're the sleeper spot team. I think teams respect us to some degree now, even in Ohio State, where they can't, you know, cruise in there thinking it's 11 a.m. Ryan Field or 11 a.m. in West Lafayette playing a team like that. Like, I think we have the respect of the Big Ten now, which is, it's nice to be at that place. So it means we've had a good string of success here, and, you know, everything's still in front of Illinois. They have an opportunity here with the final 5 games. I think Washington honestly might be the biggest test remaining. Yep. Here. If you get through this game this week, then, you know, you could run the table here and still make a case for the college football playoff.
And to your point about the fact that we get respect now, it kind of stinks, because I know that, like, most fans would know that, you know, the whole Ryan Walters effect, and they're not gonna, you know, take us lying down type thing. But like, the fact that we are now kind of an arrived football program, like, you can't just like go and be like, oh, well, this is a team from the Midwest that is coming all the way out west and is going to play, you know, with sailgating and all that, and they've never seen this. And it's like, yeah, we're not going to sneak up on anyone anymore in terms of like a Washington team that is very quality. And you know, I know that you and I were there for what, the installment at Soldier Field and
oh, yeah,
and those demons that we need to exercise. So hopefully, you know, Brett's going deep in his bag for some clips this week to show the curb stomping to get the boys motivated.
Who is the wide receiver on that Washington team, the super fast dude that torched us in that game?
Oh my gosh.
I want to look this up.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is great podcasting, but
didn't he, whoever it was, I want to say ended up with like the fastest 40 time in the NFL draft or something along those lines. And wow, that game at Soldier Field was what, 20?
That was 2013.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's see. Illinois, Washington. 2013. Was that where we had a Marquise safety gaffe and he got by, Washington got behind?
No, that was South Florida. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Cause we were in that game and we were, potentially going to win, but then, yeah, John Ross. Yeah, you were right. Yeah.
John Ross.
Kaysen Williams, Kevin Smith, and John Ross. I said John Ross hesitantly because I know he had the fastest time, and then he hurt himself because he was wearing Adidas spikes and not Nike and didn't get the $1 million or whatever for running the fastest time.
Yeah.
But I had forgotten that he went to Washington. I think because the Bengals drafted him, I kind of just threw him into the middle of America or maybe the East Coast and thought maybe he was like a fast guy from the ACC or something like that. But yeah, that
I'm looking definitely at this box score. We lost that game 34-24. That was at Soldier Field.
Yep.
Early in the season too. And their quarterback, a guy by the name of Keith Price, went 28 for 35, 342 yards, two touchdowns. And on top of that, Bishop Sankey ran for 208 yards on 35 carries, scored a touchdown. Meanwhile, Shieldhouse, 9 for 25, throwing the ball for 156 and one touchdown, one interception. Donovan Young, Josh Ferguson ran the ball. Ryan Langford, 3 catches, 100 yards. Not much offense going in that one.
I think that was the week after Munchie Legault's ankle was hanging off of his knee. So that was, I think that was the week after, or maybe the week before, but it was early enough in the season that, I don't know, did you go to that game? Because I know that I trekked up on the buses from Champaign up to good old Soldier Field. So you were there?
Yeah, I was there for that one. I remember
this is before, for all the listeners, this is before the lore of Dan and John really kicked off, because I was so early in the year that even though we were right across from each or right next to each other in our dorm, we still hadn't quite set this up.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't even know if we played Washington since. And I still don't believe Washington.
I think we played them the year after, right?
Oh, yeah. I think
that was the
we
second went, of the
we did go
home.
To
yep.
Washington mm-hmm. for the follow-up game. Yep. And I think they torched. That was the game. I think that was the game where John Ross might have gone crazy on us, because he didn't do much in the game at Soldier Field. But regardless, I still don't think Washington is a Big Ten team. To me, Oregon has earned their stripes. They're officially a Big Ten team. I have not given the Big Ten title to Washington yet, but I think if they beat us, we have to grant them their Big Ten status officially. USC has earned it as well. UCLA is starting to potentially earn their Big Ten status, but Washington to me is still the one, mostly on the basketball side of things, where I can't associate them with Big Ten basketball yet.
Yeah. I feel like if they can conquer the Big Ten West and us coming into town and beating us, then they probably earn their stripes. It's honestly, even Jed Fish, it's like, I know that this is his second year, so it's not like such a new concept to him, but even listening to a bit of his press conference that he had today, he was talking about how, Big Ten football, you don't know how many possessions you get, because, the game against Michigan, it was just kind of like who can sit on the ball more. And it's not the Pac-12 after dark where you're just lighting it up and going 63-60 ball games out here. So a little bit of a vibe change. And I still worry though, because like that matters when the West Coast team is traveling to the Midwest or to the East Coast. But I feel like when we go then to out West, it's just like, well, I don't even know what we're doing out here. What's going on? They're going to score a million points on us. We don't know what the forward pass is.
Their offense is certainly dynamic. One of my favorite quarterbacks in the country, Damon Williams Jr.
Yep.
is super explosive running the ball. He looks like Bryce Young playing football, but he's even slipperier. Like, he's got Lamar Jackson qualities running the ball. He's not the biggest guy, but he's been putting up some incredible numbers. And to go with it, they have Jonah Coleman, who I think is maybe the second best running back in the country behind Jeremiah Love. He's been unbelievable. He's a big bruising back. He can run, he could put up Bishop Sankey type of numbers.
Yeah.
And those two together, you put a couple good receivers on the perimeter. Denzel Boston can go up and get one. And
beast.
They have a pretty explosive offense. And, you're going to need to have some readiness coming into this one, similar to the game plan that I thought was, you mentioned it earlier, somewhat effective against Ohio State prior to the bye week. I thought our defense was able to slow down Ohio State's running backs. I think they only ran collectively as a running back room for about 100 yards, which all things considered was well done. So some of the adjustments we put into place for that week worked. You get the extra week this week and, see what you can dial up.
Yeah, I honestly feel like for a guy like Jonah Coleman, the comp is, I think about that play last year that Caleb Patterson had against, I think it was Nebraska, where he caught like a swing pass and like bounced off of four Nebraska defenders. This wasn't like an FCS opponent. I think it was Nebraska, if memory serves, even though it was only last year. But like, he just takes up the sideline after bouncing off of four or five dudes. And it was like something you'd find in a video game where people are like, wait, how does this video game make sense? This isn't real life. And then you see a guy like that do that last year. And I find myself comparing the two in terms of, like you said, these bigger backs that can be very athletic, but break tackles at will. And then the thing too that I'm kind of pissed about, DeMond, you know, I know that you love him. I like this Washington team in general. This was a team that them adding Ryan Walters was kind of a boon for them, I feel like, because Fish is such a good offensive mind. And, you know, they've had enough talent come through the program. I mean, they were DBU back in, you know, when we were in college, like the teams that we were just talking about, they consistently churn out top flight corners or even guys who just get drafted. So they've got good enough talent. And the thing that sucks is that, like, DeMond, I feel like he used all the interceptions in the game against Michigan. Like, I was kind of hoping, like, you're losing this game, buddy. Like, just save a couple interceptions for next week, please, one time. But I, you know, I mean, obviously you can't rely on a great player like that having two bad games in a row. And, you know, hopefully, you know, he can. But it's going to hopefully be a scenario in which their defense was so worn down by Michigan because, I mean, it was kind of a rock fight, as we touched on earlier. And it was one of those where their defense was on the field for so long that hopefully, I don't think there were any major injuries that came out of that game. I know they have some lingering injuries from prior weeks that could bleed into the game against us, but hopefully it's still one of those, not that you're rooting for injuries, but just these guys being so worn down that we can out physical them at the point of attack on offense. And then on defense, like you just touched on, and like we talked about earlier, some of those adjustments that, you know, you see success against an Ohio State, and hopefully that can translate some confidence into a game against Washington where you're going away, you're going up against a very prolific offense, and hopefully, you know, coming out the other end with a dub.
The only injury I saw in watching that game was to the punt shield tight end. He got stretchered off the field, but other than that, there weren't any substantial injuries. So maybe,
I think they had two from prior weeks that I was doing some cursory research, and I mean, honestly, college coaches, until it's like the NFL, and I think that they need to do this sooner than later, especially with all the gambling and whatnot, like until it's standardized with injury reports, like these guys are just so coy that they might say, you know, you might have a situation like Brett talking about Xavier Scott, where it's like, oh yeah, his x-rays came back negative. Like, an x-ray doesn't tell you about like a strain or a sprain to a muscle, right, or anything like that. It's like these guys, like they'll say like, oh yeah, he might be back, or he's out this week, and you don't really know. So that's, I only make that note because I didn't see anything coming out other than what you said, but there might be some holdovers from prior weeks that maybe they'll come back and be difference makers. But
Now that the Big Ten requires an hour before the game to put out the official status report of players? That's the only standardized thing. But like, you know, you don't have to say anything during the week going into it. I know Brett will oftentimes offer up, like he did, that, you know, no substantial injuries this week. I don't think that includes Xavier Scott, who's still, from what I've been told, is going to be out until December or so. Yep. So I don't think we're going to see much of him. But other than that, it seems like the bye week came at the right time for Illinois to get healthy, get some of these guys back in there. I know Aiden Loffrey the last couple games is, you know, slowly working back into the rotation, but he certainly wasn't taking on the full load that he was accustomed to earlier in the season. And part of that might be because Khalil Valentine started to look better. But, you know, if Bielma says everyone's healthy, one of the guys I was most concerned about after the Ohio State game was Khalil, who I thought it looked like he went down awkwardly, but he had a 300 pounder falling on him sideways. So I'd like to take it that when Brett says there's no injuries, that means Khalil Valentine is good to go, because that was certainly a big concern of mine.
I mean, I thought his leg snapped. And I thought, speaking of Munchie Lego, not that we're talking about that in regards to Khalil, but I just thought, you see that kind of play and you see a guy fumble, like that is, I feel like, the clear cut indicator. These guys who have extreme mental toughness, who have extreme, you know, tenacity and vision and ability to body control. Like, when you have something like that happen where you're in so much pain that you drop a football, like that tells me, like, oh, you know, his entire, everything from below his thigh is messed up, and I don't even want to watch this replay. And I didn't really, to be quite honest, just because it still got bent in a weird way. But the fact he was on a bike later, I guess that means, you know, he's young and he's got very agile ligaments. I don't know, but hopefully, yeah, he's okay. But to your point, the bye week came at a great time. And I do kind of love the fact that the two bye weeks are close together, to the point where it's like, oh yeah, like why, what was the thinking behind this? But I also kind of love it because you just touched on how the back half of the season should in theory be easier, just looking at the opponents. And you kind of had this, like, you know, run up to the season where you were trying to figure things out, and then you kind of crescendo with some of these really tough opponents. And then you get this, these two bye weeks just kind of planted in the middle of the season. And hopefully that allows you to not only get healthy, but then to really devote time and attention to this Washington opponent that is kind of like the make or break point. Like, I'm sure we'll touch on it later or, you know, after the game. If they win, I'm going to start talking really recklessly because, like, I feel like we'd say this, but like, it's kind of the survive in advance type of mentality. But if they have that capacity to put these resources to this game because the two bye weeks are so closely interlocked to each other, it's like, just go out there and focus on, I know they say 1-0, but like, this is the most clear and obvious 1-0 that if you take care of this, you so much have a path. I mean, Penn State fell off. You have two losses to potentially the top two or three teams in the nation, just looking at it. So it's like, why not put out that great resume and keep putting your best foot forward and go out there and take care of Washington, even though this is going to be an incredibly tough test.
Are you ready for a stat here?
Oh yeah.
All right. Since we're talking bye weeks, Brett Bielema, 6-1 off bye weeks in his time at Illinois. His only loss was his first year in November. We lost to Iowa in coming off a bye week. I think it was 33-23. But since that point, he's 5-0 in bye weeks since that point, since from 2022 on. So you don't want to see Brett Bielema off a bye week if you're the opposition. And he seems to be the guy that always kind of has an adjustment here or there. Like, he makes the right tweaks when he's got that extra week to dive into the tape. I know he was hitting the recruiting trail this past week, but it's a good time to evaluate. I know he's talked about in the past, essentially doing a scouting report against your own team and seeing, okay, what are the flaws? Evaluate yourselves just like you do the opponent, and how would you attack yourselves, and then go and address those things. And, you know, I thought we saw a little bit, like I said, with the Ohio State game prep, that hopefully you found something and a couple minor adjustments here or there to tweak things. But it's the right time to get in there, evaluate things, maybe make a couple personnel switches should you decide after you've had 7 games worth of tape that, okay, one guy is rising to the occasion. Someone else hasn't been doing the job. Maybe there's a couple switches. I don't have anyone in mind in particular, but certainly could see some personnel changes. And then after this week, I think next week becomes the final 4 game stretch where you could start playing some guys that, you know, more freely without burning any sort of red shirt since the 5-for-5 did not pass.
Yeah, the self-scout is so important, and I think to your point, like, having that sample size of games, you know, they weren't really looking to mess up any cohesion. I think, you know, the only time that there was any kind of mix-up was when Josh Kreutz sat out and they, you know, won the Purdue game without him, and that was probably a tactical choice to get him healthy for Ohio State, and, you know, it almost bore fruit. But I don't necessarily think there will be any major sweeping changes, but just even seeing how different personnel, being able to take that 30,000 foot view and seeing how the personnel interacted with each other, and maybe, I don't know, mixing something up at linebacker, I don't know. To your point, it's a good time to take some inventory. I was thinking, was that Iowa game the one where they picked up the flag of the hit on Brandon Peters where they like headhunted him and they picked it and he like threw a pick on that? Was that game? I think that was. Because I remember being pissed about that because it was like a pretty close game because you said 34-24. And I want to say because that first year was the 9 overtime game where it was, yeah, that was to Brandon. And I think that's when
that was one of the bye week games too. That was the first bye week game for Brett, the 9 overtime Penn State game. And then there's a few other games, the 50-49 Purdue game, mm-hmm. yep. against Ryan Walters, yep. offensive coordinator, Ryan Walters. That was another game off a bye week. So we've won some close ones off byes, and the only one being the Iowa one that we weren't able to pull out, but I can't remember exactly if that was the Brandon Peters hit, but yeah. You have a brain for those calls where you get irrationally mad at dumb refs.
I mean,
I'm sure you're right.
Yeah, I think so. And that's why, like, when you were talking about that, anyone who was watching, I like slapped my forehead because remember being, yeah, irate at the fact. I don't even think that's irrationally angry because that's just like something where that like, I don't even know how they didn't review that for targeting. I don't know. This is something that we don't need to relitigate because we probably did on the pod when we were going through, which is hilarious to think that we've been going long enough where we could probably go back and find our reactions to that. But it's one of those where, yeah, I I don't necessarily want to talk about the Ryan Walters angle so much because I feel like, and I even listening to the press conference, I feel like they did a good job of like asking Brett about it. And but like not so much because I think over the years it's kind of been talked about ad nauseum, and he did a good job of, you know, kind of paying her respects. But I still feel like there's just, I don't want to say so much unresolved, but also like even sitting here as a fan and thinking about if he was still in Champaign and you had him and Barry Lunny with this team this year, I'm not saying that they would have been, you know, smoking Ohio State, but with the experience in this group of guys, man, it could have been something so special. And it just like that opportunity cost perturbs me. But then thinking about how once there was some level of severance between the two parties and then how he acted and how Brett, I'm sure like, yeah, I mean, I know we love Brett and he's like not a perfect angel, but like, I feel like he was pretty respectful. And to still get some of like the weird shenanigans last year where they were running out on the field during halftime with the bands going on. And so like, there's just like this little thing that I know Brett wants to take the higher road, but hopefully he's still banking these things enough that like whatever juice Ryan Walters would use at Purdue to get his team into it, to, you know, try and beat the crap out of the Illini, I hope Brett somehow is, you know, making that kind of case similarly to the guys. I mean, I know that you kind of don't necessarily need to do that when you think you're a good enough team, but like that little extra bit of magic, it would be wonderful if he could kind of draw upon some of that and just get the boys ready to go into Washington and kick some butt.
There's always a little bit of extra juice when you play an old familiar face. And I think most of the energy was spent in the Purdue 50-49 overtime game last year. But I think there'll still be a little bit of juice. There's still familiarity with some of the players on this year's team and playing for him. So you're always going to want to go out and perform your best. And if you get that little extra motivation, it can't hurt. And the difference, I guess, in this case is Ryan Walters has a little extra motivation. His Washington players are not, there's no affiliation for the most part with any of the Illinois team. So it's not, hey, Purdue, we need to go beat Illinois because of, you know, a couple recruits that were on the team that flipped over to Purdue and some of the other staff some of the other staff members that went to West Lafayette as well. It's just one man versus some of his old players and stuff. So I don't see that storyline nearly as, I don't know, aggressively as it had been last year. It's not to me kind of his top of mind, but yeah, to your point, hopefully Brett's using any little angle he has.
Exactly. Yep. And even like seeing him in it's kind of like the AJ Pierzynski effect. I dub it for myself as like I loved it when he was on our sideline, but then seeing him like in the tight t-shirts and like, you know, getting really animated, like even watching the Washington Michigan game this past, they'd cut to him after like, you know, Michigan would score on them. And I'm just like seeing him with like this, you know, bravado and, you know, obviously not in those moments because they had just scored, but like, I'm like, just like, don't love it when I don't necessarily say I despise it, but I'm just not a huge fan of it, especially when he was doing it at Purdue. And so the fact he's still doing it kind of still draws on some of those familiar emotions, but I got to respect the fact that like, yeah, when he was doing it for us, like I didn't care at all. And I loved it because that drew out the best in, you know, a bunch of NFL DBs. But, it's one of those where I just am very worried because the Ryan Walters boogeyman at Purdue has haunted us. And now this is like kind of a weird spot where you're going to a very talented team that, oh, just so happens to have your former defensive coordinator who kind of had your number when he was a head coach at a very like not so bueno rivalry school in the Big Ten. Like it just feels like the perfect confluence of events that little extra juice that, to your point, like he doesn't have any history with Washington players against Illinois, but like it's just that little thing on the scale on the Washington side that just makes me even that much more nervous.
Yeah. You want to go into our players of the game?
I'll let you start because I feel like I'm always leading us off.
All right. I'm going to go with a guy. I don't think anyone's picked this guy this year, but I think quietly has put together a very nice year. And that's Joe Barna, who I think in a game like this, I haven't even mentioned it, but I was deep diving the forecast, 52 degrees and rainy all game. It's supposed to be very rainy on Saturday. So I think it's going to be a slop fest. It's going to be a game where you're going to need to get to the quarterback. And Joe Barna seems like a guy who's just kind of built for those cold weather games. He's a bull rush master. I feel like every time I see him, he hasn't had too many where he's gotten all the way home to the quarterback, but he's been driving tackles back all season long and kind of tightening the pocket. And, you know, you need to do that a couple times on DeMond, get him happy feet, get him out of the pocket and try to see if you can get him off kilter. You know, stick with whatever Michigan's game plan was, because they only gave up 7 points. And to your point, I think he had 3 interceptions in that game. So see if you can harness some of that power. And I think Joe Barna is a guy who, he's not going to be the highest guy up on the scouting report when you have Gabe Backus and you have, you know, some good interior defense linemen that have generated decent pass rush this year. So I think Joe Barna is a guy who might have a breakout game. So that's my pick.
Yeah, I'm going to stick on the defensive side. I'm going to go with Matt Bailey, just because, to your point, with the weather and the conditions and even just like the physicality that they need to bring. If Jed Fish is talking about the, you know, how it feels different in the Big Ten and all that, like, this is the kind of environment to really assert yourself. And I feel like Matt Bailey has been consistently good. Like, he hasn't been, you know, making terrible plays or taking terrible angles, but he hasn't quite had that breakout game like he had last year against Michigan, where he was all over the field. I feel like he's not quite stood out and played up to his potential, which is, you know, something that we're all hopeful for. But I don't really think this is too chalky a pick. I was maybe thinking of going like ultimate chalk and calling upon Luke Altmyer and maybe getting some of those vibes I was talking about with Ryan Walters and channeling those. But I think I'm going to go with Matt, just because this feels like a game where if you're going to look to assert yourself physically, like, he's going to have to be the leader playing downhill, taking care of these dynamic playmakers. This is something where, like, whether he's even like a spy, because he's athletic enough but big enough that he can take down a guy like DeMond, or he can, you know, be up in the box to take care of a Jonah Coleman, who, you know, we were just talking about how he's one of these bigger backs, getting him up near the line of scrimmage so he can make some plays. I mean, even if it's something as simple as, you know, a Joe Barna tip ball that, you know, falls into his lap and he takes it 70 plus yards for a touchdown, even better. Like, this, that, then we're both happy. But it's one of those where, like, I want to take offensive guys because it's more easily discernible, like, their impact upon the game and being like, oh, this is my pick of the week and they did this, that, and the third. And defensive guys is kind of like, well, as long as you don't do anything wrong, we can kind of like justify you having a good game. But this is something where I'm looking for Matt Bailey to really make his mark and have like one of those X factor type plays that we've seen him have in the past, going back to his true freshman year, where he had, I know it was garbage time, but he, you know, flashed ball skills and being able to intercept passes and, you know, show signs of the future that, you know, we thought now it'd be like just consistently all Big Ten play. And that's not to say like he hasn't had some moments, but just looking for him to put it together for an entire game would be unbelievable. And so I think that he'll come out and rise to the occasion and be that guy.
He like Barna, I feel like, is built for the sloppy weather game where you can't be soft in those games. And he is probably the least soft, most intense type of player. And those are the guys who usually, like, weather doesn't affect them. If anything, they play better the worse the conditions get. So I could see him flying around and making some plays. And I don't know, that punch, he and Rosiak with the punch, you get a couple of those on DeMond, who's going to be out flailing the ball around.
Yep.
A couple weird bounces, you know, slippery. Yeah, that's what we need.
Yep. Yeah, I like this. I like the way that we're thinking about this. We're not trying to overthink it. We're just playing good Big Ten football.
All right, prediction time.
Oh man,
Let me go because I got another stat for you here. Washington, 6 of their 7 games this year, they've given up between 19 and 24 points. So super consistent, with almost every game they give up somewhere between 19 and 24 points. They're playing us, you know, and that includes Ohio State, who they played. You know, we're a pretty good offense this year, and I think we'll put up a few points, but the conditions to me will kind of neutralize things. So I'm actually going to go Illinois, talking about, you know, Brett Bielema's 6-1 off a bye week. I like Illinois off the bye week. I'm going to go 24-20 in kind of a, not a rock fight, but a war of attrition to some capacity. We're not going to go out and put up 50 points in this one with the conditions. And I think our receivers have been great this year, but it's going to be tough to throw the ball around. So give me a hard fought 24-20. You do the little things right after not doing the little things right in the Ohio State game, and get back on track to see if he can make a run down the stretch. So that's what I got.
I'm in the same ballpark, and I just had to pull this up because in one of the things that I forgot to mention, but have been thinking about in terms of like not an actual revenge factor, but Ethan Malcheski, he's at Washington.
Oh yeah.
It's bizarre though that they haven't given him a shot because the Grady Gross or Gross, sorry, I usually am not listening to their broadcast at full volume, so I don't know how you pronounce his last name, but some of the kicking he's done has been gross because he's 75%. I mean, 6 of 8 is not necessarily like that bad, but yeah. Still 75% on the season doesn't instill a lot of confidence, and he's missed like some not so long field goals. So it's one of those where I feel like it could come down to that where it's 21-20 and they're driving and then they've got a field goal with some slippery conditions. And then this guy, maybe they put out Malcheski to get some revenge on us. And then he puts one right down my throat. And then I'm sad that I didn't predict them to win 23-21, but I'm going 21-20. Good guys. We get off the schneid, get right back into that playoff conversation, and you and I start talking wild next week.
The special teams edge from Illinois. I can personally guarantee that there will be no punts knelt down in this one.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was for a season that just like has had so many weird things happen like that. Like the fact that you then have that, like it's just it, like that just can't happen. It can't happen. But hopefully, once again, talking about Washington special teams not being quite up to snuff, maybe they bail us out if we have a bad special teams play. But like you just can't. It's the whole thing. Brett says this too. It's like more games are lost than they're won. Like you just can't lose the football game, especially to a team like Washington that, you know, we saw it last week with them having some untimely turnovers and them maybe not having the best kicking operation, their defense being worn out. Like this is primed for them to lose the game. Now that doesn't mean you just kind of like go out there and whatever happens happens. You still got to take it to them, but you just can't be dumb. Can't be stupid. Can't be having dumb penalties. Can't be doing anything stupid after the whistle. Can't be trying to hold a guy on a punt return or a kickoff return when you know if he's outside of your frame, just don't hold him. If you see his numbers, don't touch him. Just don't do anything stupid. Don't put your knee on the ground if you're catching a punt from the long snapper. Figure out the long snapping operation. Just like don't lose the football game. If you lose a football game like this, it's like gonna start some kind of craze where people are going to start talking about how this team isn't, this program isn't actually good because last year they got really lucky and this year they haven't beaten a good team. And I just don't want to hear that because it's not true. But then at the same time, like you can't go out there and be the football 101 team and then not football 101.
I like that rant right there. The punting situation though, I do have to say this going back to that at Indiana going to that game when we had the punt block. I was this Indiana fan that was sitting next to me was trying to talk to me. He's like, how do you know so much about, cause I was pulling some deep cuts talking about Taven Jackson and how he went to Center Grove or asked if he went to Center Grove High School. And this guy's like, how did you know who our backup QB was from last year and where he went to school? And I'm like, you're talking to a certified ball knower here. Of course I'm going to know your roster better than you. That's how I prove that they're not actual football fans. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. I told him when we got the punt block, I said, of course, because I know how much Indiana hates Purdue. I said, of course, we have the Purdue punter, Keelan Kremens, with the Purdue stink on him that's going to blow this. And sure enough, he kneels the ball down. And I think there might be something to be said for maybe we just don't take Purdue transfers from now on because they're always going to have that little bit of Purdue stink on them. And it shows up at unfortunate times. But certainly don't think Brett Bielema will allow him to kneel a punt down ever again.
Yep. And I know that we had the, even though it's another Australian, I hand up, haven't watched much tape on him, the commit in the 2026 class, who's Australian. But
the guy that was wearing jorts at the at the game when he showed up for his recruiting visit.
Uh-huh. I don't know his punting style. I haven't taken a deep look into his, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you can have that rugby style and still have that coached out of you at the college level. It's just more of like, hopefully he is like the answer, because this is not to disparage Keelan Crimmins. He was all Big Ten last year, but I think some of that might've been the counting stats of him just being on the field so much to punt that he just kind of naturally netted a higher average than your other Big Ten punters. So hopefully, you know what, maybe that's a bonus X factor. Put it, a editor who is actually me, put it in somewhere that bonus X factor is Keelan Crimmins and his bounce back game. I'll figure out some kind of effect to make it look good. But
can you also just edit in a picture real quick of the punting recruit, the new Australian punting recruit wearing the jorts on the sidelines of last week's game? Cause that was electric.
Yeah, we'll see how creative I can get. I'm thinking maybe a bonus pick of Keelan over my face, and then a bonus pick of the recruit over your face, and that's just how people are going to get to view the end of the podcast.
If it does come down to special teams, I do like David Alano being our kicker because it's rare to have a kicker in college that you're confident in from pretty much any distance. And I have more confidence in him than any kicker we've had. And we've had some good kickers come through the doors. So I like that when it comes to the margins in college football and trying to win the close ones. An inch here, an inch there, a doink here, a doink in there. That could be the factor. But Illinois 4.5 point dogs. We didn't even mention that. But Vegas, they're not necessarily buying us right now.
That's what I have to say.
Yeah. Did
That is
anyone
my new
tell?
favorite celebration of DBs. I do kind of like this is good, but like I do kind of like that you get the little extra emphasis of the, but it's not too showy. Like
Yeah.
I'm a respect the game kind of guy, but I do like a little, it's an emotional game. You know, you got to celebrate when you do something good, but not too much. Like you can't be going up there and like acting like you swatted away fourth and long when a quarterback just overthrew it. But just giving a simple, you know, two thumbs down, I love it.
Hey, we're here for a good celebration, but hopefully Illini are celebrating this week on the road at Washington, number 23, back in the top 25. Vegas doesn't like us, but they don't know Brett Bielema is 6-1 off bye week. So the boys here at the Field Pass like Illinois in this one. Take it to the bank. We appreciate you all for listening. As always, you can find us on social media. We're just at the Field Pass. Thanks, and go Illini.